the title of my book, King of Travelers. I traveled in a lot of foreign countries. I was in about 49 foreign countries on 6 continents through the years. It's really important to me to travel, and especially to go to India. I've been twice to India so far. And the title of my book, King of Travelers, Jesus Lost Years in India, it comes from a conversation that I had when I was teaching in Saudi Arabia some years ago. And what happened was that I was talking with some Muslim scholars, very learned gentlemen, and they were telling me about a great Muslim traveler who lived in the 1300s named Ibn Battuta. And Ibn Battuta was from Tunisia. He traveled for about 30 years. He traveled from Tunisia to Egypt to Arabia to India to China. And he came back home finally to Tunisia. And the story was that he was on his deathbed there in Tunisia, and some admirers came to him. And the admirers gathered around his deathbed and they said, "You, Ibn Battuta, are the greatest of all travelers." And the story was that he sat up in his deathbed and he smiled and he shook his finger and he said, "No." He said, "If you learn the truth about Jesus, Hazrat Isa, Prophet Jesus, if you learn the truth about the life of Jesus, Jesus is King of Travelers." And the phrase kind of stuck in my mind, King of Travelers. And I knew that the Holy Quran of the Muslims refute Jesus as the chief of travelers and the great traveler. When I was a teenager, I believed in reincarnation since my early teens. It made sense to me. Let's see, we got the focus on this one. And that Edgar Cayce, I found out about Edgar Cayce when I was 18 years old. I met a young man from Hopkinsville, Kentucky, who told me about Edgar Cayce and Edgar Cayce's wonderful work giving readings, medical readings, and then later life readings about concerning past lives. There were numerous times that Cayce mentioned that Jesus had lived for years in India, especially those teenage years in the early 20s, that much of that time was spent in India. So that was the first place that really got me thinking about Jesus in India, and I have a great regard for the Cayce material. By the way, that book there, The Story of Edgar Cayce, There is a River by Thomas Sugrue, it's a wonderful book. And then I found this book also as a teenager, The Aquarian Gospel of Jesus the Christ by Levi Dowling. Levi Dowling was a Civil War chaplain in the Union Army, and as I understand, he was a very spiritual, very dedicated individual. In the years after the Civil War, that Levi Dowling found that he could go into a deep trance state, he could contact the Akashic Records. That's the same place that Edgar Cayce could contact. The Akashic Records, the Hindus, that's a Hindu term, the Akashic Records are a record of every thought, word, and deed that has ever taken place on the earth plane. And it's kind of like a great cosmic tape recorder playing that records everything. And so Levi Dowling wrote this book, and a great part, a big part of this book, tells about, specifically, about young Jesus in India, how that he had a sponsor from East India, from the state of Orissa in eastern India, named Prince Ravana, and Prince Ravana was his patron. And it names specifically places that we'll see more of later, such as the Jagannath Temple in eastern India, the cities of Puri and Cuttack, Benares, and other places. Afghanistan. What happened was that when I was going to school at the University of Alaska at Fairbanks, that the interest about going to India was really building up in me. So in my beginning of the senior year, that I volunteered for the Peace Corps. And I figured that was maybe the only way I'd be able to get to go to India. I wanted to go in the Peace Corps to India. They didn't have any opening right then for my area, so that what they offered, they said, "Would you like to go in the Peace Corps to Afghanistan?" I didn't know anything about Afghanistan, but I said, "Sure." They said, "That's close to India. When you get vacation time, you'll be able to go to India." This, by the way, is a wonderful picture book by Roland and Sabrina Michaud from France. Fantastic picture book. How can I tell you about Afghanistan? Afghanistan is like going back hundreds of years in time to a vastly different place. Afghanistan is an amazing place. Some people call it very backwards, very primitive. And it was in Afghanistan. This is in India. This is the courtyard of the Golden Temple of the Sikhs. This is Mount Everest up in Nepal. This is a place in Afghanistan called Bandi Amir, the Dam of the Saint. It's a natural mineral deposit around this huge spring. It's become a huge lake. This is in Srinagar in Kashmir, northwestern India. What happened was that just about 3 days before I left to go to the Peace Corps, I was back in my hometown of Lampasas, Texas, and what had happened, I had charted out in my mind places I wanted to go to in India, mostly in North India. And I knew that in the Levi Dowling book, The Aquarian Gospel of Jesus Christ, I knew that it was mentioned that one of the places where Jesus had spent some time was in Srinagar in Kashmir and other areas in Kashmir. And so that was kind of on the back burner. I thought, well, maybe I'll go there. Maybe I won't. What happened was that my mother happened to be at a fabric shop, to go to a fabric shop, and she saw someone that she had gone to high school with, a man that she had not seen since high school. And so that man and his wife were there. My mother buckled up her courage, and she walked over, and she said, "Are you so-and-so?" And he said, "Yes, Dorothy, how you doing?" And what happened was that my mother mentioned, she said, "Oh, by the way, my younger son is just about to go in the Peace Corps. He's going to go to Afghanistan, and he's going there because he's crazy about going to India." And the man really lit up, and he said that he had spent his career in the State Department, and in most of his career, he was stationed in India. And he said, "Where is your son now?" And my mother said, "He's a few blocks away up the hill, up at the house." And the man said, "I must talk to your son. I must talk to him before he goes to India." So he came up to the house, and the main thing that he told me, he said, "When you go to India," he said, "you must go to Kashmir." He said, "You must go to Kashmir." He said, "Kashmir is like Shangri-La. It's like another planet. Kashmir is like a fantastic, beautiful, otherworldly place." And he said, "You must promise me that you'll go to Kashmir." And I said, "Okay, I'll go to Kashmir." So what happened, the opening chapter of my book, it's meant to be a little bit irreverent, "A Very Strange Bottle of Beer, A Connection with Jesus in India." And I like this quote by Krishnamurti: "Whenever a human being sets out to find the real truth about something, he must first arm himself with great courage, because he may not find what he is expecting." So what happened was that, how can I say it? Afghanistan was a difficult, and is, a difficult place for a Westerner to be working and spending time. And very strict, very harsh Islamic culture. And so what happened was that about the only place you could go to get a drink, to get a beer, was over to the American Embassy Annex. There was a small bar in the American Embassy Annex. And the bartender there was a Pakistani Christian. Pakistani Christians have to take Christian names. His name was Mr. Wilson. And so he wore a turban in the Pakistani outfit. He'd say, "Hello, Saib. How are you, Saib, today?" "I'm fine." You know, like that. Anyway, that what happened one day there at the American Embassy Annex, that I saw that critter right there, London Lager. And at that time, the label said Murray Beer, the way I remember. But the brewery, I'll take this off here, the brewery is in Rawalpindi. The brewery is in Rawalpindi there in Pakistan. And what happened with Mr. Wilson, the bartender, it was kind of a quiet time right then in the bar. And so I asked Mr. Wilson, I said, I saw the name Murray, and you see where I was, at Kabul in Afghanistan, and over here is Rawalpindi in northern Pakistan. And I said to Mr. Wilson, "Is that name Murray Brewery?" I said, "Is Murray named after an Englishman?" And he said, "No, Saib, Murray is named after Mary." And I said, "Oh, Mary was an English woman." He said, "No, Saib, Mary is mother of Jesus." And I said, why would a Pakistani beer be named after the mother of Jesus? Pakistan is a Muslim country. And he said, "Because name Murray from Mary comes because of town near Rawalpindi in mountains. There is tomb of Mary, grave of Mary." I said, "Mary, the mother of Jesus Christ, is buried in northern Pakistan?" And he said, "Most assuredly, I've been there numerous times to the grave. Been a holy place the last 2,000 years. And Muslims revere Mary." He was explaining. He had to take care of another customer. And so I had another drink and sat down. And that really threw me for a loop. I mean, that wasn't what I wanted to find. That we'll go on from here. What happened that it was okay with me that Jesus had been in India as a teenager and a young man. That was fine with me, but I wanted him dead on the cross. You know what I'm saying? I was raised as a fundamentalist Christian. I wanted him dead and then up in the right at the right hand of God. This is something briefly right here. Memories of the British Raj has arrived fitfully in Pakistan at the Murray Brewery, Rawalpindi, and it goes on like that. And then there's a label over there again. We'll go on from here to, this is the tomb of Mary, mother of Jesus, in Murray, Pakistan. So this is in northern Pakistan in the Himalayan foothills. And just briefly, what Mr. Wilson told me that time, he briefly explained that some people believe that Jesus survived the crucifixion, and incidentally, that's what it says in the Holy Quran, and that he was in a state of near death. He survived the crucifixion, and that he later, after he recuperated, he returned to India where he had spent his youth, and along the way in what's now northern Pakistan, that is, his mother, Mary, became very ill, and it was her time to pass on. And of course, Jesus had great healing powers, but it was time for her to pass on. So she died and was buried there, and her tomb ever since then has always been revered and still is. Here's a more modern picture of the tomb of Mary in Murray, Pakistan. And this is a book by Elizabeth Clare Prophet that I found early on in my research, The Lost Years of Jesus. And that photo is painting is a painting of young Jesus on his way westward through western Tibet and in Ladakh in northwestern India. And this is the art of Nicholas Rorick. And Nicholas Rorick was a Russian explorer and an artist, wonderful painter, and he painted hundreds of gorgeous Himalayan scenes, marvelous Himalayan scenes. And incidentally, that I mentioned in my book, that there's a Nicholas Rorick Museum in New York City. Every time I'm in New York City, I go over there to the Nicholas Rorick Museum. They have hundreds of his beautiful Himalayan paintings, and I'll show you what some of them look like. This is Mount of Five Treasures, Kanchenjunga. This is in eastern Nepal. It's another Himalayan scene. I don't know if that shows up too well, but there's a rock here with Tibetan writing. Steed of Good Fortune, Leh in Ladakh, and we'll talk about Leh in a little while. This was a place where young Jesus spent some time. This is the unknown life of Jesus Christ. The bottom may be cut off a little bit. If we could raise the projector up just a tad, maybe we could get the bottom of some of these. This is by Nicholas Notovich. Nicholas Notovich was another Russian explorer and traveler, and in 1887, there we go, Nicholas Notovich was traveling in northwestern India, and he, like Nicholas Rorick, traveled for years in that area, Central Asia. And as Nicholas Rorick was in northwestern India, he was thrown from a horse, and his leg was fractured, and he was taken to the nearby Buddhist monastery, Tibetan Buddhist monastery at Himisgompa. Himisgompa is a monastery which is close to Leh that we just mentioned. And it was while he was recuperating at the monastery, this is Nicholas Notovich, it was while he was recuperating for weeks and weeks at the monastery, he became friends with the Buddhist monks, and they trusted him after some time. And what they did was they said, by the way, we have a 2,000-year-old document here which tells about young Jesus in India. Would you like to see it? Wow, yes. And so they showed him the document in Tibetan, and the document was translated for him, and the document basically said very similar things to the Aquarian Gospel book, Aquarian Gospel of Jesus Christ, that book that I just mentioned, mentions the same places, such as the Jagannath Temple that Jesus studied for about 6 years at the Jagannath Temple in the state of Orissa in eastern India, that he was at the cities of Puri and Cuttack also, that he was, here we go. This just tells a little bit, an unfortunate accident whereby my leg was fractured first with a totally unexpected pretext to enter the monastery. Excellent care and nursing, and it goes on, manuscripts relating to Christ. And entertaining no doubt of the authenticity of this narrative, written with the utmost precision by Brahmin historians and Buddhists of India and Nepal, my intention was to publish the translation on my return to Europe. which he did. But he met with considerable, this is the document, the life of Saint Esau, the best of the sons of men. And Esau is the way that Hindus and Muslims refer to Jesus. They call him Esau. We'll talk in a bit, we'll talk about the name Emmanuel, which I believe, and the Talmud of Emmanuel explains, that was the name, his true name, the name that he was known by during his lifetime was actually Emmanuel. But let's take a look at this, that it starts out telling about this is telling about the events of the crucifixion and so on. And this concerns, let's go on to the next one here. Yes, this names some of the places. Let's see, Northern Sindh, country of the five rivers. That's the Punjab, the five rivers. Panjab, Punjab. And Rajputan, worshippers of the god Jain. Those are Jains. That's one of the one of the minor religions in India. Left the misguided admirers of Jain and visited Juggernaut in the province of Orsis. That's Orissa. And Juggernaut, or it's also called Jagannath, that's where we get the word rolling like a juggernaut. You've heard that expression, that once a year at one of the big Hindu celebrations, they have a big float type of a device, and they have it on wooden rollers, and they roll it from the Jagannath temple down to the eastward to the ocean. And the story, the myth that kind of built up was that the device, this rolling float, it doesn't stop for anything, rolling like a juggernaut, and goes all the way to the ocean. Let's see, down here, read and understand the Vedas to heal by prayer, and then we go down here. He spent 6 years in Juggernaut, Rajagriha, Benares, it's now called Varanasi, that's on the Ganges River, other holy cities. Esau lived in peace with the Vaishyas and the Sudras, to whom he taught the holy scripture. But the Brahmins and the Kshatriyas, and it goes on, the Brahmins and Kshatriyas did not like the way that Jesus taught equality, that all humans are equal. And these classes, the Brahmins are the priests, the Kshatriyas are the warriors, and then these two classes, the Vaishyas and the Sudras, the Vaishyas are the merchants, and the Sudras are the poor farmers, the majority of the people. And this was in 1922, Swami Abhedananda. Swami Abhedananda had read the Life of St. Esau manuscript, which was discovered by Nicholas Notovich in 1887. So Swami Abhedananda read about that, and he can read and write Tibetan language and Sanskrit and so on. And so he made a trip in 1922 to that same place in northwestern India, to the Himisgompa Monastery. And he was there and speaking with the monks, got to know them. They trusted him right away, and they showed him the Life of St. Esau, the best of the sons of men, the Tibetan document, and he held it in his hands and could read it and translate it himself. And then he wrote this book, Journey into Kashmir and Tibet, and he verified that it was real and that it was a 2,000-year-old, it was an ancient document. This is the Himisgompa Monastery, by the way. And there's an interesting story I'll tell about in just a little bit, that Aziz Kashmiri, newspaper editor in Srinagar in Kashmir, and I'll go ahead and get onto that. But what happened was that when Aziz Kashmiri was here in 1965, that he was with a group of about five other journalists from other parts of India, and they were given permission to go into this area where they would not normally be allowed to go. They went to the Himisgompa Monastery, and while they were here, that down here in the basement part of the monastery, there are the archives, which are more than 2,000 years old. The archives, the head abbot here at the monastery had died, and the new abbot had not been chosen yet. And so there's a time frame of about 2 or 3 weeks where that, according to their tradition, between abbots, when one abbot dies, they allow the archives to be opened until the new abbot is elected, and then the archives are closed again. And what happened, that he happened to be there between the abbots, and what happened was that the Lama who was showing them around in the archives was showing them, and this, by the way, is what a Tibetan book looks like. The pages are loose leaf pages that way, and they're bound and so on like that. So that's what a Tibetan book looks like. And this valley right here, this is in Ladakh, right in that area near Himisgompa. And let's see. This, what happened was that when I went to India, I had 2 months to travel around in India, and when I was in India, that I went to Kashmir. At that time, there was a lot of tourism, not only foreign people, but many people from other parts of India, that it was a kind of inexpensive vacation. They'd go up to Kashmir. And what happened was that I stayed on a houseboat. There are several hundred houseboats here in Kashmir. And so what happened was that I got up the next morning and I went to, I found a taxi driver and I said, I would like to find a bookstore that has books in English, some books in English, and especially spiritual books. He said, I know of just such a place. And I said, how much does it cost to get over there? And he said, 15 rupees. And I said, 10 rupees. How about 12? Okay, let's go. So we got over there to the bookstore, and it was an old kind of a bookstore. Ceiling fans were creaking. No other customers in there. The gentleman, the owner, he had a necktie, and he was drinking a cup of tea and reading a book. And so I said, namaste, and I went on in. And up right at the front part of the bookstore to one side, there were a bunch of these yellow books, Christ in Kashmir. I thought, wow, this is amazing. I thought, this is just the kind of thing that I wanted to research here. And I saw the name Aziz Kashmiri, and he's the editor of a newspaper there called the Roshni, the Light. And so what happened, I said to the bookstore owner, I picked up the book to buy it, and I said to the bookstore owner, do you know Aziz Kashmiri? He said, oh yes, he's a good friend of mine. And I said, do you think I could possibly meet him and interview him? He said, let's give him a phone call, we'll see. So we called him up on the phone, and they spoke in Kashmiri for a while, then he handed me the phone, and I said, I'm an American, I'm traveling here, I am keenly interested in the subject of Jesus in India. And he said, I have been researching that subject all of my adult life, around 30 years or more. And I said, could I meet with you sometime? He said, how about right now? I just finished a meeting. I said, great, like that. So I got the directions from the bookstore owner, same taxi driver was out there, took me up there, and it worked out that I talked for more than 2 hours with Aziz Kashmiri. Here's a picture as he looked back then, when I met him, and this is the new fifth printing of Christ in Kashmir. It's a beautiful book. Here is Aziz Kashmiri now. He's 81 years old, and he's active. He still goes to work every day at the newspaper. His son works there with him at the newspaper. And Aziz Kashmiri showed me in his office there, a very memorable place. There was one window facing, or one wall that was full of windows facing to the north, facing toward the snow-capped Himalayas. And it was a very interesting discussion we had. There was a bookshelf that he had that was about this wide and about this high, and it was full of books. Every book in there was about Jesus in India. About half the books were in English, the other half were in Hindi and other languages published there, many of them published in India. But he had many rare and hard-to-find books about the subject of Jesus in India. And one of the things that he told me that I was kind of young and stupid back then. I used to say the truth a lot, or used to be very directly honest. And so we had, he was telling me how that this, he said, for all of my adult life, since I have been a teenager, this has been my hobby. Jesus in India has been my hobby, like that. And I said, I don't mean to offend you, but looking at your material and everything you've researched and done, it looks to me more like an obsession than a hobby. And I said, I think that's great, but why is it an obsession for you? And he walked over to the beautiful windows and stood there looking at the Himalayas for about 2 or 3 minutes. And I walked over nearby at the window, and I just looked out there too, and I knew he had heard my question. So he just looked out the window at the Himalayas for about 2 or 3 minutes, didn't say anything. And then he turned toward me, and he smiled, and he said, I have my reasons. And I did not know until years after that, I was reading Jim Deardorff's wonderful book, Celestial Teachings. Celestial Teachings is a verse-by-verse comparison of the verses in the Talmud of Emmanuel with the book of Matthew, and with scholarly comments by biblical scholars and so on. And that in the foreword part of Celestial Teachings, that there is a mention of a newspaper editor in Srinagar, Kashmir, northwestern India, a newspaper editor who is a biological descendant of Jesus, of Emmanuel. And then as a holy mother bear, that's Aziz Kashmiri. That's who I met and talked with. Wow, that's why the subject was so important to him. And this, and I mentioned about Aziz Kashmiri, the gentleman we just saw, telling me about being in the Himiskompa Monastery and being in the archives. When what happened also at that time that he was in the archives, the flash unit on his camera was broken, and what happened was that he was being shown the Lama, who was taking them around, and they had flashlights. The Lama was showing there were thin stone pallets like that. They were about yay big, and they were paintings. There were paintings there were hundreds of them, he said, there in the archives. And they were paintings, almost all of them were of Buddhist monks and abbots and so on, with shaved heads, and they were sitting in the lotus position. And they had maroon-colored, saffron-colored robes, and they were all shaved-headed. But there was one that was very different, and that one that was very different was a man with a full beard and a mustache and long hair, and he had a what looked like a warm wool cap on. He was wearing the traditional baggy shirt and pants, the peron and tamban, and he had a warm woolen-looking vest on, and he would look robust and suntanned and healthy, and he was smiling. And he's sitting there like that, and then Aziz Kashmiri walked over to that one. He was shining his flashlight, and he was saying, "Who's this one? What does it say at the bottom?" And the priest, the monk, went over there, and he cleaned off some of the dust on the bottom of it to read the Tibetan writing, and he was kind of trying to sound it out, and he said, "It's Yeshosh, traveling Hebrew sage and holy man who visited here in the time of Abbot so and so." And he said, "That was about 2,000 years ago." And Aziz Kashmiri said, "Well, I don't know." He said an expletive or not, but anyway, it was like, "Wow, that is Jesus. This is when Jesus was here for about 2 months after he had traveled from India up through what's now Nepal into Tibet and then across through Western Tibet, and then he came through that the valley, and he was at Himiskompa Monastery at Leh and then at Srinagar, and he stayed about 2 months at Himiskompa, and he was teaching and doing healings, and they loved him so much that they painted a portrait of him along with the other people they honored. But I show this picture of men from Afghanistan, and you see these caps that they're wearing. These are warm wool caps, and this design of the caps, it comes from Alexander the Great, they call Alexander Sikundar. They still remember him very much. That Sikundar and his army of 50,000 Greek soldiers, they came in 300 BC all the way from Macedonia, all the way across what's now Turkey, Iran, Afghanistan, Pakistan, India. But they came all the way into India, and this is a traditional design that the Greek soldiers used they would make these woolen warm caps. And the reason I'm showing this is that Aziz Kashmiri told me that Jesus was wearing one of these. It was apparently cold weather when the portrait was made. He was wearing one of these warm woolen caps. And they still use this design now in northern Pakistan, northwestern India, eastern Afghanistan. You still see those kind of caps. And then this is the tomb of Jesus in Srinagar. This is in the Aziz Kashmiri said, "By the way, the tomb of Jesus is here. You want to see it?" And I said, "Sure." And so I went over there, same taxi driver, went over there and got over there, and he'd given me the directions. It's in the Kanyar district, the old city district of Srinagar, and the place is called Rozabal, resting place of the saint, and that went inside, and there's nobody else in there, and inside there's a stone sarcophagus, and I really had goosebumps being in there, and this shows, by the way, this shows, you see the marks in the feet, and the name that Jesus, that Emmanuel used after the crucifixion was Yuz Asaf. Yuz Asaf means leader of the cleansed. Yuz Asaf. It also, Holger Kersten thinks that it may be derived from Bodhisattva, the expression Bodhisattva. Bodhisattva, an enlightened being, like an avatar. And we'll see some more. Let's see. Did anybody want me to go back to that one? This one right here, this map, if you can see right here, Murray. There we go. Here's Murray in the Himalayan foothills right up here. And this is where Mary died, where her tomb is. And then not far over the mountains here, you come into the Vale of Kashmir. Here's Srinagar. There's a place, by the way, right about here, 12 miles or so away from Srinagar, called Pahalgam, which means the meadow of the shepherd, Pahalgam. And it's supposed to be that when he first got back here, that he lived for maybe 2 or 3 years there at Pahalgam, in a cottage at that place, a high meadow, and with wonderful springs, wildflowers, wonderful place. And by the way, the Quran, Holy Quran, mentions that Jesus and his mother, that when they left the Middle East, that they went to a high country with springs and flowers, and that fits that description perfectly of that area. And then he lived later at Srinagar, and we'll find in the Talmud of Emmanuel the Talmud of Emmanuel relates how, in the latter part, information from Billy Meyer relates that Emmanuel got married at about the age of 45 to a pretty young lady, and the tradition has it that her name was Marianne or Mary, and we'll see some more information about that later. That could possibly be Mary Magdalene. I don't rule it out. Mary Magdalene may have traveled overland in another caravan and joined him. Maybe they were in love. I think that's great. And then here, she used to be a prostitute, but I think that's great. And here we go. Leh is over here. And here's Himis Skompa. Here's the Himis Monastery. That's just a few miles from Leh. And when he was coming from Tibet, when Jesus was coming from Tibet, he could well have come around this way. This is Jesus in India. This was written in the 1890s by Hazrat Mirza Ghulam Ahmad of Gadian. And Gadian is in right about in that area, western India, close to what's now the Pakistan border. And my mother used to say Ed likes India because he can say those names that white folks can't normally pronounce. Hazrat Mirza Ghulam Ahmad of Gadian. And he was the leader. He was a prophet. Hazrat means prophet. And he would, Hazrat Mirza Ghulam Ahmad, put special emphasis on the subject of Jesus in India, and especially after the crucifixion. This is the route that he believed he may have taken up this way and across that way. And that Hazrat Mirza Ghulam Ahmad, he started a movement, you could call it a sect or a movement within Islam, called the Ahmadiyya Muslim Movement. And I showed about Aziz Kashmiri. Aziz Kashmiri is one of the leaders of the Ahmadiyya Muslim Movement. There are Ahmadiyya Muslims here in the United States, many thousands of them. There are several million Ahmadiyya Muslims in that region of northern Pakistan, northwestern India, and in other parts of the world also. That one of the interesting things I've spoken several times at Ahmadiyya Muslim conferences. By the way, I don't know if I mentioned, but Billy Meyer, if I'm not mistaken, that Askit, who was Billy's teacher for 11 years, Askit at one point asked Billy to join various different religions, the Jewish religion, other religions, and so on. And one of the religions that Billy joined for a while was the Ahmadiyya Muslim religion. And that Hazrat Mirza Ghulam Ahmad, he, at one point in the 1890s, early 1900s, he made a prophecy. He said that 100 years from now, the latter part of the 20th century, there'll be young people from the West, from America and Europe, who will come to India, and they'll travel around in India, and will find information that proves that Jesus lived in India, and they will write books about it and give talks about it. And that at one of those Ahmadiyya conferences, with a lot of people there, that one of the elders stood up and he told about that prophecy, and he pointed at me and he said, "Here is the fulfillment of prophecy." And I was like, "Whoa, okay." And this is Holger Kersten's book. I may not pronounce the German names the right way, but Holger Kersten wrote Jesus Lived in India, His Unknown Life Before and After the Crucifixion. And I certainly admit it was a hard pill for me to swallow about the survival of the crucifixion. And, oh, yes, I'll show you again. Holger Kersten, K-E-R-S-T-E-N, Holger Kersten. Right, this one is in English. It's translated into English, and it's a book that's in print, and you can find that either at a local bookstore or they can order it for you. It's in print. Holger Kersten lives at, I believe, Freiburg in Germany, and teaches, I think, at a theology school. But Holger Kersten is, we'll find some more about his research. Let me show you about a website here. Let's see if there we go. The Tomb of Jesus Christ. This is the photo taken by Holger Kersten, that same photo. And the website is very simple, www.tombofjesus.com. And this has research and all this information and so on, related information that I'm in the vendors area, and Jim Deerdorf is back there, Wendell's there, Mike Whelan, and you know about Mike's book, I'll hold it up, Wendell held it up earlier, but anyway, I'm over there all week, and if you would like to follow up on any of this information, I'll give you, be happy to give you free information, and also I'll be happy to give you a business card. At the bottom of my card, I've got Jim Deerdorf's website, and Jim Deerdorf's website is a marvelous website that has extensive information about the Talmud of Emmanuel, and it also has dozens and dozens of connecting links to other UFO sites, UFO-related sites. It's a wonderful website. And he